Welcome to Real Fix Reviews, or like a book club for people hate reading. This month they're doing Grab Bag again, so I picked the movie 12 Angry Men, made in 1957. And we bring you movie news. This week we have Jonathan Charney, James Stevens, Ryan Preston.
And the old guy's actually in studio. Hey.
So here's an IMDb description of what this movie's about. A dissenting juror in a murder trial slowly manages to convince the others the case is not obviously clear as it seemed in court.
Others. So close.
We were both wrong.
You jerks. The first thing I want to say is, oh my God, this cast is literally nuts. You've got Henry Fonda, Lee J. Cobb, Martin Bislam, who I never pronounced right, John Filler, E.J. Marshall, Jack Klugman, who
it's
went on.
It's the who's who of TV personnel, a movie
and
personnel.
Marshall.
And and Jack Klugman is known for The Odd Couple. That's one of his more famous roles. Edward Binge, Jack Warden, who was in the movie Toys that we did earlier this year. Good actor, shitty movie.
Yeah, great actor, shitty movie.
Ed Begley, is that the dad of Ed Begley Jr.?
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Yeah. It was. And John Weber and George Vaskovec. I mean, absolutely insane. And then this movie, in my opinion, is completely character driven, based around
has to be character driven. It's told within about 15 feet squared.
Yeah. But the plot for what it is, I mean, the basic story is what? Maybe a paragraph? Two?
Well, yeah.
I mean, that to me is amazing.
There's a lot of depth to what they were talking about.
Oh, no, totally.
And what they're dealing with, and it's pretty much like a little look inside what should be happening.
Oh yeah.
You know, like the guy was saying, you know, if it's your life in their hands, don't you want them to be doing this?
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
And I love.
That's how he got him talking about it in the first place, is he's like, this kid deserves a few words, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
And I do find it funny that the two movies we've done with Henry Fonda, which was Young Mr. Lincoln 1939, we did earlier, I think last year, and in this movie, Henry Fonda is still preachy.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was the preachy person in most of his movies.
Well, did you actually see on Golden Pond?
Yeah.
He's the one who insisted that he wear white sort of symbolically during the filming of it.
Right.
You know, I think he likes being the sort of the altruistic hero, you know?
Well, that's kind of what he's known for. I mean, between that and his voice, which is very, not only distinct, but I just the quality and tone to the character he plays lends itself very well.
Yeah.
I was going to say it's not something you find these days, but I think it's not something that people pay attention to because of all the other spectacle that movies have become.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
This kind of limited storytelling. I mean, especially even with the limited color aspect, you know, it forces you to sort of pay attention to that rich detail that you otherwise would have overlooked.
Oh yeah.
You know, and what totally. I really liked is, you know, each person's, you know, as they moved along and they listen to somebody else and they start thinking and you know, they're actually spending the time to digest what somebody else is actually saying. Hard to find that these days.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
You know what was interesting about the characters and totally is character driven.
100%.
And it's a murderer's row of great actors, but they're all playing archetypes. They're not all the characters are sort of one dimensional, but to the movie's credit,
right.
Because they were sort of playing like you know, aside from sort of the one guy having the breakdown about his son. I mean, everybody kind of just had like their job. They were just all, they didn't really give them any names because this is the every jury. You know what I mean? This
right.
is joke
right.
jury. If that makes any sense.
No,
I didn't even think about that, but about the archetypes, but. You're totally right. I think that's one of the reasons they play off so well off each other is because some of these archetypes are so like morally opposed to one
right.
another that that you don't have to have deep characters.
Well, as you listen to the story, of course, you know, you're trying to figure out, we don't really get to see the kid.
Yeah.
And so as the story develops.
The kid in the beginning.
Yeah.
They're sort of playing the pronoun game as much as like oh, you know what they're like, and they never obviously said what particular race. It was always sort of this inferred, like, it's the every race, you
right.
know, like the every minority.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was very interesting as it went on. And you know, you had those that people that had the built-in prejudice already just because of whatever, yeah. Right? And then, you know, the others are saying, hey, let's give it a break and really look at it. And then the older man that was the detailed-oriented gentleman in the story that watched everybody's actions, their face, the nose dimples, you know, all these things. And so you had a lot of character structure in all these people. And it was amazing, you know, to see, you know, like Lee J. Cobb, that, you know, usually he's a cop and he's the good guy. And, you know, he's the badass type person. And in this one, he plays, you know, actually plays kind of the dark role in this case, you know, the guy with the problem and all that. Incredible job of acting.
He was the guy who's made his son a man.
Yeah. Well,
I love go, James.
When you start watching this thing, the first thing that I did was I was looking at each one of the guys and trying to guess which archetype they're going to be playing. Because that's what Ryan is saying and Rob is saying, is that when you look at it, they're all going to be playing a certain stigmata what may be in there. And you can basically go in a group of 12 people or any group and figure out who's going to be what just by looking at them. And even Henry Fonda's character, when he first started, he didn't really have a basis for saying not guilty. He just didn't want it to be that quick.
Yeah.
He thought that it being that quick, there was something wrong with that.
But I did think it led into later on, and when he said what it was, as far as being an architect, I thought him not being sure led into what his character's job and profession and the type of character that was. You know, being a guy who's maybe a little bit smarter in some areas, you know, math and all that, I really kind of lent it to the.
Well, the one guy who was, you know, the grew up in the slums in those areas, you didn't really guess that he was that guy. He
The role that Jack Klugman played, you know, where he was asking everybody when they were working with the switchblade, have you seen a knife fight? Have you seen, he said, I have, and I know how a knife is handled.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to say. One, I love that they put that character in, the guy who's like, hey, I'm one of you, I'm the jury of our peers, you know, we're the same, you know, like sort of white people, I guess, is what they were kind of getting at. But like, I'm from this place too, you know what I mean? Like it's not just them or they were talking about. I live there, you know.
I played in the garbage and the debris. I played in the broken areas. You know, grew up in these things. So, you know.
It brought up, you know, the socioeconomics of it, of it all, as opposed to just the racial aspect.
Which one of my favorite lines is when the old guy gets up after, I think it was 9-3. And he gets up and he starts saying, what are we doing? How come you aren't going after these people? Don't you see that they are like that? And everybody starts standing up.
Right.
I'm trying to think. It was the one that John mispronounced. I think it was Balsam. No, it wasn't.
That's juror number one.
E.G. Marshall.
Yeah.
E.G. Marshall is like one of the few guys sitting at the table. And he just looks over at him and then says, keep your mouth shut and don't open it again.
And that was the second time something like that happened, because the other guy, the big guy in the room, threatened the guy who
Edward Benz, excuse me
for stuttering a bit.
No, that's fine.
You know, because he said, if you don't stop disrespecting him, I'm going to lay you out.
Yeah, exactly.
And
so, you know, and he mentioned that he was a painter, so you knew he was a laborer of some type. And the guy he was talking to was probably a desk jockey. Yeah. And kind of went, oh, shit, I don't have a chance here, so I better shut up.
The thing I liked, as we kind of also talked about, was like the way they showed like the characters. Like, you definitely like racism and other people's particular attitude against things. But I like the way they really kind of showed it instead of, you know, being super obvious. You know, they kind of jump subtle hits, you know, like what's
kind of remarkable about this movie is the limited storytelling. Okay, but that's one thing. But then having like this story that you, okay, 12 Angry Men, it's what's the movie about? It's about a jury that they can't decide whether this guy is guilty or not guilty. As soon as the movie starts and it's the one guy versus the 11, you sort of infer, okay, well, the end of the movie might be him talking everybody into it or whatever.
Right.
But for, so from there, from the audience sort of realizing that and still being able to make your plot turns, you know, like kind of come out of nowhere. The second act plot turn when he drops the second knife on the table, you know, you're, because before that you're sort of just kind of along for the ride of him talking, you know, like trying to make his point and you know, I'm not really sure, but I just want you guys to be on the same page as not really sure also, you know. But for that plot turn to hit like that, and then all of a sudden you're like oh man, now this is going in interesting directions, and then, you know, the archetypes playing on each other after that. I mean, it's just yeah.
I really, that's actually one of my favorite parts when the guy goes, you know, what if there were 10 knives, and, you know, you had Henry Fonda go, what if? And the fact that the guy made his point without really realizing it, you know, because at the beginning, his comment was, well, that was, nobody's ever seen a knife like this. And it was, you know, a pawn shop.
By the way, I went down that neighborhood, and at the little store for $6, I bought this knife.
And it was a pawn shop gimmick being, oh, it's rare. And yeah. I really, that part right there, I just thought it was really the start, in my opinion, of Henry Fonda starting to really break everybody down.
Now, the thing that I thought was interesting is nobody threw in that thing of, beyond reasonable doubt.
Yeah, but in the very beginning, what
they did.
The judge said it, but nobody even mentioned it in the jury room.
Well, that's
what I listened for it.
Henry Fonda alluded to it.
It was inferred. It was inferred. Maybe not those exact words, but it was inferred because a number of times he said, you're sure. Yeah. And the guy said, we have to be
100%. There was the Russian guy who said, do you know what beyond reasonable doubt means? And you had the baseball fan say, are you asking me? Like, really get offended?
What do you mean
you
don't know?
Yeah. Like, you know, like some foreigner's going to tell me what English is.
Yeah. Well, you know, the scene that I really liked was the Lee J. Cobb scene where he gets all really mad and he says, he's getting mad at this guy because, you know, egging him on. He says, I'm going to kill you. And then he realizes, oh,
he got
shoot, pushed.
He
went, oh, man, this is what I've been arguing about. You know, and then all of a sudden, you know, he says it.
Yeah, and then he said multiple times that he got pushed to that point.
Yeah, and that's when E.G. Marshall, it was him and E.G. Marshall were talking about, you know, when they went to the coat rack and said how the guy really talked you up, you know, really pushed you, said he did a good job of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So the other thing I think we should talk about is really the cinematography, because one, this really is like two sets, maybe not three, the three or four, because you got the outside, you got the bathroom, you got the jury box, and then you got the room where they were talking as a jury.
Right.
And that's amazing. I can't think of any movie besides this that has less than, you know, four sets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If you looked out the window a few times, you could tell that those were painted sets.
Oh, yeah.
But hey, you know.
You know what's interesting about it is the director Sidney Lumet actually made these guys sit in a room for like 4 hours rehearsing all of the lines, but without the cameras even rolling, just to get them kind of used to being in a room with the same people, you know, and kind of frustrated with each other.
What a genius idea, you know, put them in there, let them start, you know, working on it and getting themselves revved up for this thing.
I don't know if you guys noticed. I mean, I'm glad you brought up the cinematography because it reminded me of how many long shots there were, you know, of many, many bits of dialogue between a lot of characters. And right. It was just one after another. You know, movies make it a point to do like one of those in a movie, like the Avengers. That was their big thing, was they did the one follow and shot.
That sweeping shot. Yeah. You know, but
this one, I mean, the amount of time these guys actually rehearsed versus the amount of time they filmed. They rehearsed for like 4 weeks and ended up filming for like 21 days, which at the time was insane. Nobody filmed a movie in 21 days.
Right.
But it showed with those long scenes when they're talking to each other. I mean, shit, this movie holds up from 1957.
Oh, no kidding.
It probably helps.
I was in like a lit class when I was in like sophomore year or something and didn't remember a thing about it and wasn't very interested at the time. I didn't give this movie much the due it deserved.
Yeah.
They probably shot it in 21 weeks because they didn't have a lot of stuff to move fucking set pieces. And
Ryan's point about being shown in the number of classes, I believe I saw this in my junior high class in social studies. And this movie being played then, because it showed the process when we were talking about how does our judicial system work? How does the jury system work? Yeah, and how it should work, you know, versus the OJ trial, right?
So I'm just going to throw this up there, by the way. To Kill a Mockingbird sucked. I don't care what anybody says.
So the other thing...
They didn't kill one single bird.
The other thing I wanted to talk about is, because Ryan talked about how, you know, the long shots, but the close-up shots, too.
Yeah.
You know, everything about this, you know, like they started really getting mad how they zoomed up on the face and they did the long shot to see everybody's reaction.
I think black and white leads itself to certain things because you're not distracted by the color palette. You're looking at, you know, the person. And I think in many cases that, you know, the color and the scenery and the spectacular and all this gets in the way of the story and the character. In this case, you had the character and he was in your face and you were, you know, you were listening to what he was saying. And I thought it was great.
I'll say, I guess the same thing I've said every time we do a black and white movie is the black and white is another character. It can lend itself to like when it's noir or not. This time, I definitely agree with Rob, and the character wasn't there. It was neutral. Mm-hmm. So I think that's one of the reasons why this was, you know.
Maybe we should start watching all our movies in black and white, huh? Just turn off the color. Let's see what it's like.
Maybe like watch Uwe Boll movie black and white. And since Rob is obviously the oldest among us. And
I was actually born before this movie was made.
And possibly so the oldest of our two audience members. What do you give this movie?
I am going to give this movie an outstanding 5 out of 5.
And Ryan?
I mean, just for the simple fact that this thing holds up since 57. Yeah. And I mean, I was riveted watching this movie. Yeah, of course a 5.
James?
Sure, why the hell not?
Well, I'd love that.
Well, go ahead, argue for a lower one. Go ahead, come on, I dare you.
I could.
Like we're in a jury room.
Yeah, he could.
Now, present your case here.
That jerk counselor. That said that he did not sweat, he sweated. That's
at
a
the
point.
End there, that's true. He did finally sweat through his makeup.
And that proves the point that James is the most pedantic among us. I give it a 5 out of 5. Just an amazing movie. It really is. And so the next up, we're going to do House of Cards, Chapter 13, whatever it is.
End of the first season.
And who wants to go?
So this is kind of where we see the start of the change. We already know Zoe's going to, she's trying to come into her own at this point and not just be a sex toy. And of course, we know we kind of know where the congressman is headed to in the next season and what he plans on doing.
The two things I think is interesting is one, I think Zoe is starting to realize how much she was used. She wanted to be used, but I think she didn't know it to what level.
Yeah.
Okay. And I love the fact that he's being haunted at what he did.
Probably because of Claire. And you know, now the shoe is on the other foot. Here she went off and was with a past fling, and he couldn't get a hold of her. And so all of a sudden now, it's like I said, the shoe's on the other foot, and he's going, crap, I can't find her. Where's she at? She has to hire somebody to find out where she's, you know, who she's with. And then so that hit him a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Now is it going to stick?
He's not in complete control.
He's not in complete control like he would like to think. And unfortunately, since we're not going to do season 2, I'm going to watch it.
He's going to die.
We're not going to do it yet.
I want to know.
Dog killer.
I got to watch this thing now.
The murderer, man. The murderer. Well, actually, I'll save my point for next week when instead of movie news, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the entire first season.
Ryan's still there. Yeah. He's alive. Yeah. And he's not frozen.
And I want to remind you that we do have a Facebook page. You love us, hate us. Hey, how about donating money? Pause for the cause to help Old Guy Tech TV keep the lights on.
Every insult you give me, give them $10.
Yeah, I mean, how can you, with all the episodes we've done by now, how can we not have any traction? I don't understand.
So,
true. Somebody's going to stumble across the show and say, you guys are screwed up, and we'll tell you why. Yeah.
So, I've got some movie news, and the first one is something that I found out this week that happened to
I bet I know
probably one of my all-time Tim favorite Curry. Character actors, and it was one that I was legitimately heartbroken at, was Tim Curry's stroke. And I love this guy because he's an actor that you love to hate, and you enjoy the fact you dislike his character.
So I want to know something, just because this shocked me. Ryan, did you know he had a stroke 3 years ago?
I had absolutely no idea.
Yep.
And James? I don't know, something kind of ashamed of them.
Three years ago, he had a stroke. And actually, John and I had a conversation a while back going, you know, we haven't seen Tim Curry for a while. I wonder what he's doing. Well, shoot, he's in the hospital and he can't talk. I mean, you know, he's out and about now, and but he's in a wheelchair. So anyway, Tim, you know, you're an incredible actor. We wish you well.
And I was, you know, when you have this happen to actors that you hate their characters, but you love the actor, I was legitimately like, shit, not him. Mm-hmm. Take Uwe Boll. Forrest Whitaker.
The second reference to Uwe Boll. Trying out.
He's got a crush.
I guess. Forrest Whitaker, or the chick from Twilight, the one that never smiles.
Maybe we should do Rocky Horror Picture
Show. She might
show.
Smile if she gets a stroke.
Oh, we're sorry. That blame him. Send him all the emails. And
remember, $10 per harsh comment.
So,
do you mean if she gets a stroke and then hangs upside down from the monkey bars?
Oh, jeez. So before we get too cruel. Hey,
I don't know about these guys. Listen. You know, you give me some money, I'll work on them.
Wow. So before we get too cruel and YouTube decides not to let us on the air, Disney, the Tomorrowland, Disney expects Tomorrowland to suffer a $140 million loss.
Really?
And this is interesting. It was...
I've wanted to see it.
They said the Walt Disney Studios high concept but box big budget film failed to draw the same applause and appeal, opening at a soft $42.7 million over the long Memorial Day.
Because look at what was released around it, so Disney.
Wait, hold on. That movie's out already?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been out for like a couple weeks.
And there you go, folks. That's why Disney is expecting...
I'm going to have to turn down my headphone. That hurt. Expecting
a loss.
That's what Disney said.
And this is also along with Lone Ranger, which 2 years ago bombed on Disney, and John Carpenter in 2012.
That should have done better.
So the interesting thing is that this website brought up is this is what's going to happen to tentpole movies that are. Original stuff. Like, don't forget you had Jupiter Ascending and Seventh Son, which were original material, but bombed. I mean, they're based off of books.
I heard Seventh Son was good, though.
I liked it, but it did not do good.
I liked Jupiter Ascending. I thought it was good.
I heard bad things about that one.
If you wanted to get really nitpicky, as a movie to go out and have an afternoon and have a good time with, Paula liked it. I liked it. It was
entertaining. You notice he said afternoon, so matinee time?
That's right.
But come on, he eats dinner at 3 in the afternoon. He is the old guy.
Don't pay full $18 price for it.
Go to the $5 show.
So this I think this brings up a good question. And the movie industry now, you've got a lot of movies like Marvel's that are pumping out sequel after sequel, and spectacles like the Transformers. Are tentpole movies that are original material?
No.
Are they going away?
Those are not. You're saying Marvel and those original material?
No, no. But you've got Jupiter Ascending, you've got Seventh Son, you've got Tomorrowland that are standalone movies
that are
tentpole because how big much money they threw into them and they bomb. Is this the end of kind of the original film era?
Let me just break something down.
You might be right.
One second. When Disney comes out and says, "Oh, the movie's going to bomb." First of all, they continue to make money on this movie for years to come.
Yeah.
Right? So what they're talking about is it's going to buy a bomb is that they're not going to make their money back in the first weekend. It doesn't mean that they're not going to make money on this movie because as it gets released in other countries and as it gets out on DVD.
Merchandise
and everything, it will make money. It's just not making money the opening weekend.
But it also definitely means there's not going to be a sequel. I definitely have not Tomorrowland or or the Lone Ranger.
I'll bet you.
I'm still going to watch it.
Well, there'll be, if there is, it's not going to be in the theaters. I guarantee you it'll be direct release.
But he's got a good point, though, is that, you know, this is Disney taking a step out of sure things, mm-hmm. you know, like John was saying, Transformers,
Marvel. Which I have always been saying Hollywood come up with original material.
No, but I'm saying movies that they know are releasing concepts that they know are moneymakers. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Wolverine. Transformers, Marvel, Wolverine, X-Men.
Yeah, right.
You know, for God's sake, I don't know why Ant-Man, but, you know, those are movies that they expect people to go out and see, and then they have something like Tomorrowland, which I want to see.
I still want to see
it. Yeah, I'm going to go see it. And by the way, Hugh Jackman did announce today that this will be the last Wolverine that he
plays. And that's an Apocalypse, right? That's Apocalypse?
Yes.
He's done.
And so for little people who are excited about the new Batman versus Superman... A couple of things on the Facebook page, we do have. Are you okay there, Ryan?
Are you taking a poop?
No.
Oh well. We do have a couple things on the Facebook page. We actually have pictures and comments about the new Batmobile, which are pretty cool.
Yeah.
And we officially have a synopsis. And since Ryan's muting us, I'm going to read it anyways. I thought you were going
to
mute.
Just give him the count to 30.
So here's the synopsis.
Are we streaming him video?
Yes. No.
Yes.
He's not looking.
We're streaming.
So it says, fearing the action of a godlike superhero left unchecked, Gotham City's own formidable, forceful vigilante takes on Metropolis's most revered modern-day savior. While the world wrestles with the sort of hero it really needs, and with Batman and Superman at war with one another, a new threat quickly arises. The interesting thing about this is you've got an older Batman, so this may take place in like the 80s Batman where he was...
Michael Keaton?
Well, no, like the comic book, where he was not the guy who killed anybody. He was more the grisly caped crusader.
I don't understand this movie at all. I'm sorry.
So Ryan, now that you're listening, I've got a good question for you. So, would you be happy if this was more grisly Batman versus the Batman who didn't kill?
Will you turn the
volume? A more grisly Batman versus what?
The Batman, because in theory, this might be the Batman that actually kills people, that drives the tank. You know, kind of like the 80s comic book Batman. I forgot who made it.
It's getting past somebody's bedtime.
He didn't kill anybody in that book.
No. But this one, he might. In the new one, it might be the grizzly one.
That will definitely not be the case.
Why do you say that?
I absolutely guarantee it.
So did you gentlemen watch the TV series Gotham?
JLA. Yes, I have been watching Gotham.
Well, I do have
another show we could do.
I do have one quick thing to say. Is this Batmobile has twin 50 caliber machine guns? That's actually one of the specs.
I'm just jealous.
50 caliber machine guns. Yeah, I mean, they're not used for anti-personnel. You know what I mean?
I'm kind of jealous too.
I just think it's interesting. I kind of hope this is more. I really want to see personally the more grisly cape crusader. That's kind of what I want to see.
Well, that's definitely not going to happen.
Well, this is somewhat based off from what I heard. Kind of the grisly stuff in the 80s. One of
those. Yeah.
Okay, but again, the grisly stuff from the 80s that you're referring to is the Frank Miller books.
Yes,
It was grisly, but it didn't kill anybody. I don't know where you're getting that from.
It's a lot more violent than what took place before, and I think it would be a lot more violent than what took place in the movies before, at least Batman.
It was drawn violently. You know, when people got punched in the face, they bled, you know, and then on occasion people got stabbed by the bad guy.
I thought he was able to break a few people's faces, too, you know, crush some eye sockets, break some chins.
I guess I would say it would visually more impacting as what he did to people.
Things he threw at people and stuck into them. And
because even Christian Bale's Batman, while it was violent, you didn't 100% see the broken bones and stuff like that. That's why I think it'd be kind of cool if you saw that.
Insinuating a few broken bones.
But actually see it.
I'm sure they're going to dial it up a little bit for the audience who has that one. I mean, you know, when it's the natural progression of this, as much as you had Adam West, campy Batman, and then somebody made Tim Burton, which was what he felt was like the opposite of that, but it was almost just as campy. And then somebody took it seriously and did the Christian Bale.
The nipples.
And, you know, so, I mean, there are, of course, you know, since everybody's Batman is now the Christian Bale ones.
Batwoman.
You know, they're going up a little bit.
That was a
And one. The last, I'd say the last bit of movie news that I'm excited about, they've released information about Kung Fu Panda 3. Which I love that little, so I'm looking forward to it.
You know, I liked the first one. I thought the second one didn't need to be done. And
I liked the second
one. Dear God, leave it alone.
I really liked the first and second one, personally. So with that being said...
Didn't you do these straight to video?
Yeah.
No, the second one went to theater.
Did it?
Yeah. Right. So...
What I'm saying for the old ones, for the sequels for Disney movies, it was always just straight to theater.
Yeah, it used to be all straight to theater.
Yeah, it might not be now. Or
VHS.
So with that being said, next week is James's pick, and he promised it would be weird, so that's what happens.
Oh, I didn't say it was weird. I said you did. Just wouldn't know what it was. Let's see if Frank can peg this one. So this is one from, when was it? 91, and for some reason I always seem to remember that I liked it, but I don't remember why. It's got a Dan Aykroyd, Macaulay Culkin, and let's see if Frank can
peg. Oh my God, really? Are you going to say Anna Chlumsky?
Yep. Which is it? Yeah.
What?
I want to find out why.
What?
What is it? Michael?
My Girl. I haven't seen
My
it
Girl.
In a
My
long
Girl?
Time.
Oh, seriously?
Jesus, are you gonna make my girlfriend happy?
No, I'm just... I, for some reason, had fond memories of it, and I don't know why, and I want to find
he's
out.
He's probably been sleeping on the couch lately.
I'm gonna actually follow you on this one, because I think I remember liking that movie, too, as a kid.
But I don't remember why. Right?
I don't remember. Either.
So I want to see why.
I have a feeling this one may go down in flames.
It's okay. John picks movies we all don't like a lot.
Hey, I don't care. What I pick is good movies.
Listen, but you know what? Look, better when we don't all like it.
I'm this one. I like watching old stuff that I saw as a kid. That you know, like I wonder if it holds up. You know, like Goonies sucks now. Like,
oh, yeah. Which by the way, why do you think I picked 12 Angry Men?
Yeah.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I gave 12 Angry Men.
I'll be the 13th.
I gave 12 Angry Men a 5 out of 5. James gave it a 5 out of 5. Ryan gave it a 5 out of 5. Rob gave it a 5 out of 5. And holy crap, another movie we agreed on.
And it was John's pick.
Yeah, really.
See what happens when I actually
no
apply myself.
It's no fun when we all agree.
So, and next.
Seriously.
And
I'm
so,
disappointed.
What series are we doing next?
We're not doing a series next. We're doing the wrap-up of...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we'll announce next week the new series we're going
to
do.
Which one we're going to battle over.
And James picked the 1991 classic My Girl.
Classic?
I wouldn't go that far.
And as always, we'll see you next week.
My Girl.
I don't remember why I like it.